scotch and one bill. One bourbon, one scotch and one bill. Hey, Mr. Bartender, come here. I want another drink and I want it now. My baby, she gone, she been gone tonight. I ain't seen my baby since night before that. One bourbon, one scotch, and one bill. And then I sit there, getting high, mellow, knocked out, feeling good. And by that time, I looked on the wall, at the old clock on the wall. By that time, it was 10:30 then. I looked down the bar at the bartender.
Beautiful sound, isn't it? This week, I put down the knife and fork and pick up a glass. A beer glass, to be precise. A pint of British beer at the pub is a national institution. Beer has been brewed in the UK since before Roman times and is intrinsically part of the British psyche. British beer is often maligned by overseas visitors as being warm, dull, flat beer. How wrong can they be? As of course we know that this is far from the truth. As William Shakespeare said, for a quart of ale is a dish for a king. And dear old Willie can't be wrong, can he? So to find out more about English beer and brewing techniques, I spoke to brewer Dave Roberts of the Pilgrim Brewery. I asked him how he got involved in the brewing industry.
What do you want? One bourbon, one scotch, and one beer.
The all-new sound of Belgrade Life.
Oh, we started over 30 years ago brewing. I decided to start a brewery because I was looking around to be self-employed and reading the books at the time. It said, do something that you're interested in, you know about. And I thought to myself, well, what on earth do I know about? And really, I scratched my head and it suddenly hit me. The only thing I really did know anything about was brewing, beer, pubs, because my family were in pubs on the one hand and my family on the other side were bakers. So it seemed to be a happy mix of retail in pubs and wholesale production of beer in. So the two things came together.
And how long ago was that?
We first started brewing in January 82, so we've just celebrated our 30th birthday. Very interesting times. There seem to be waves of breweries every 10 years or so. Something happens, usually a legislative change that encourages people. And what was a very strange thing to do 30 years ago is now very trendy. So even in my advanced years, I consider myself to be trendy, finally.
And have you seen the brewing techniques change considerably over the years?
Yes, when we first started brewing, 1982, it was almost as though it could have been 1882. The knowledge about how to brew on a small scale had been lost. And in recent years, it's become very much easier to brew because whilst we developed and relearned that knowledge, there have been a series of things coming into the marketplace, whether it's certain types of sterilants, dried yeasts, packaged malt and hops that effectively mean that people can literally start a brewery overnight, and also because of the reliability of these materials, it does allow them to produce a product that is reasonably commercial. They will never produce great beer, these new brewers, because of course they don't have the 30 years of knowledge, or the intimate knowledge that I have of choosing materials, which because they're biological things, they grow, they're different every year. So it's lovely to have the variety of materials, but also understand how they change because of differing seasons, and also be able to exploit the new materials, new hops that are coming into the marketplace, new types of malts, because as the number of brewers has grown, and it's literally gone from a few dozen when we started to over 1,000 in the country now, And that alone creates a dynamic that draws suppliers into the marketplace, which creates new products, a lot more people thinking about beer, a lot more people being innovative.
Like you say, there's lots of new breweries, or some people might coin them as micro breweries, and people setting up with, you know, in their shed in the back garden and building up from there. It has brought, as you say, brought beer much more to the, you know, to people's mindset. And when they go into a pub, I think people are now looking for really good local beer.
Yes, I think that's right. We are still, unfortunately, very, very restricted in which pubs that we can sell our beer into. We're very restricted in the types of glasses we can sell it into, and therefore that restricts the kind of marketplace we have. If you go to Germany, for instance, you have beautiful, slim little glasses. The beer is produced for a much wider strata of society than we do here. Effectively, it's still brown or yellow beer drunk by men in pint glasses. I did it in my own pub. I proved that you could have a whole pub full of people of all, both genders, of all ages, drinking beer. They may not have been drinking my beer, but they were certainly drinking beer that we had chosen and imported.
Yes, because there's a complete variety of beers now, isn't there? And I have to say, I'm rather partial to a drop of beer. And one of my favourites, actually, I do like the Trappist beers. I like the really dark beers. So there is a lot of variety out there now.
There is a great deal of variety, and people are beginning slowly to understand these different styles, but we are still held back by the pint concept. Fortunately now, as you rightly say, there are many, many pubs that you can go to which do have a huge variety of beers, because of course they can be put in the correct glasses, because the laws that we have allow you to pour a non-pint, non-imperial measure into the correct glass if it comes in a bottle. It's a curious situation. So I couldn't produce and sell the volume of beer that you're talking about, because the law doesn't allow me to, unless I put it in a bottle.
That must be very frustrating.
It's very frustrating when you have really wanted to introduce your types of beers and to a wider range of people, and where you understand how to produce those beers for people.
Haunted. like looking through a fog mirror. Decisions to decisions I made, but not bothered. I thought this wouldn't hurt a lot. I guess not. Control yourself. Take only what you need.
How would you describe your beer?
I have many brewing friends all over the world. I have taken a lot of experience out of my Bavarian friends who brew beers that are very laid back, very subtle, beautifully presented beers, very clear, very crisp, great head retention. And that's what I really follow, rather than any wild extremes. And I like the flavours that I put into my beers to be on the palate threshold. So if, for instance, you're drinking a pint of beer, you might find that it doesn't taste hugely for the first two or three mouthfuls. But the more you drink as you get through the glass, so those flavours build up on your palate. And it's what I call the added secret ingredient of Pilgrim beer. Gulpability.
I rather like that. I've not heard the gulpability before. I'm sure many people have used gulpability, but that's really good. So at the moment, where do your hops come from?
Oh, all over the world. When we first started brewing, we really did only have access to English hops, and very, very few of them indeed. But now we will use hops from England, Worcestershire, beautiful Goldings from Worcestershire. We have New Zealand hops, which have a particular characteristic. We use American hops, and we use a lot of hops from the middle of Europe, what used to be known as Bohemia.
Well, is that so obviously that's a good area for that type of hop growing.
Interestingly, the main thing is the latitude that you're in, because the nature of hops is they need certain day length to grow. They need a certain amount of light, and that can be obviously in the North Hemisphere or the Southern Hemisphere. And conveniently, it's the same areas that cereals grow. So you've got the happy mixing of cereals such as barley and wheat, with hops all grown in bands, which is why if you go further north, higher latitudes, they don't grow those materials, so you end up having people making things out of potatoes and vodka, and which is why you have spirits further north, a band of beer-growing countries, and then further south, of course, you've got the vines and the wine-growing countries.
Do you use any... I assume you use chemicals in some way, but because the old adage of, you know, when people have been drinking beer and they get a terrible headache or it doesn't make them feel very well, what makes your beer different from what I would call the mass-produced corporate beers?
There are two main things. One is the selection of materials, the quality of materials we choose, and the second thing is the process. Where people talk about chemicals in beer, of course, everything is made of chemicals. And the difference between ourselves and a large company is the brewing production process is very, very much smaller. That seems an obvious thing to say. But if you look at what actually happens within, say, the fermentation, the yeast, which normally people think of as just producing alcohol and CO2, carbon dioxide, which gives the fizz in beer, actually, if you have huge vessels, then the yeast starts producing lots of other strange things, things known as higher alcohols. And they are the things that give hangovers, and they are the things that also cause aggression in the product.
That's interesting.
And that's true of both beers and wines. I found the same thing in wines as well, that are mass produced and shipped around the world.
So your beer, you see, I'm getting to like your beer more and more now. Your beer is gulpable, and it's not going to give me a headache unless I drink 20 pints, and it's not going to make me aggressive and shout at anyone, and you know, it sounds like a perfect pint.
Do I sound like an aggressive brewer? No,
I'm
very laid back, and you'll find that brewers generally who produce good products are very sanguine about life, because they see year in, year out, the changes in the seasons. They have to adapt. They have to use a sailing term, as I've started to learn to sail, they have to go with the tide. They have to understand what's going on.
Looking out for love in the night so still. Oh, I'll build you a kingdom in that house on the hill. Looking out for love, big, big love. You say that you love me and that you always will.
Online for Belgrade's expat community.
After all this talk of beer, I couldn't resist going down and having a look and seeing how the beer is made.
So, welcome to the brewery.
Well, there's a fair amount of beer in here. How much is in here at the moment?
Well, to be honest, we've lost track because we've been brewing three different beers for Christmas, as well as our regular beers. So we've got literally beer up to the gunnels. in fact, so much we can barely move. And we've got more beer in through there, where you can see the light in the fermenting room bubbling away, as I was brewing this week as well. So next week, when that comes out of the fermenter, we're going to be severely challenged for space. But
so have you got a different beer for Christmas? Have you got a Christmas beer?
Yep, we have a Christmas beer called Saturnalia, and we also have our winter beers as well. So they roll on through December and January. Beers like Talisman, which we've been brewing for 25 years, and our stout. We produce a special stout as well. And that's always surprising to people, because people who will say, oh, I don't like stout, we give it to them. They say, this tastes really nice. And you say, well, yes, but that's because the stouts you've had are not particularly pleasant. And herein lies the problem with beer, is that a lot of beers produced commercially on a very, very big scale really aren't very pleasant at all. They have big names, but people drink them. And if they're introduced to them and told this is what real beer should be, they're sadly put off. Whereas if they tend to go to microbreweries, and of course the other thing is that not all microbreweries produce great beer. So whether it's big or small, you really have to have your hand held and led along and have it explained to you what beer really should be like. And ultimately, it's very simple. If you like the taste of it and enjoy it, then it's got to be good.
That's good enough, isn't it? So how would you describe your Talisman beer?
Oh, Talisman is a very traditional style beer, not dissimilar to our best bitter, but much richer and darker, slightly sweeter, very soft hop characteristic, and a strong
a nice warming, as you
a
say,
winter
nice
warmer,
warming,
what used to be called a winter warmer.
Yeah, and the stout, is your stout more on the bitter side, or has it got more of a creaminess to it, or...?
Bitterness is a strange thing in beer, because if you, for instance, I've mentioned Bavaria before, if you go there and measure the bitterness content of their beer, it's really quite high, but it doesn't taste bitter.
They're very smooth, aren't
they? They're very, very smooth, and this is what I've discovered by using different hops, is that by blending hops, you can have that thirst-quenching nature of bitterness, but it's not harsh on the palate. So I like to try to brew beers that are very, very clean on the palate. They have flavour, but when you swallow them, they don't leave any nasty flavours in your mouth.
Yeah, because you can get that, particularly, like I said, with these more mass-produced beers, and you get, an aftertaste.
Yes, unpleasantness. Well, it's not necessary. but, of course, this kind of thing only comes with years and years, because you can't do it with book learning. You can take one hop which is exactly the same level of bitterness as measured as another hop, yet it will give a different bitterness characteristic. We now, for instance, our original Best Bitter Progress, first brewed in 82, was brewed from two malts and one hop. We now brew with five malts and six different hops. It's still a 4% brown bitter, but it's an immensely better beer, because of the balance of the different flavours, and a much much deeper flavours, much more sophisticated beer than it was many, many years ago.
And what's this over here?
This is the brewing area, where you have, immediately in front of you, have the mash tun, where the hot water, what brewers call liquor, is mixed with the grains, which are stored in the grain store behind, and that would be a mix mainly of barley, quite a lot of wheat we use, and then another mix of possibly rye, malted rye, possibly toasted barley. There are many, many different things you can use to create flavours, create depth, create colours as well. So you can brew a beer that's virtually has no colour at all, right through to beers that are pale gold, golden, auburn coloured beers with a hint of red in them. There are many, many... It's rather like a violin, I suppose. There are many different tunes you can play on the same instrument.
Yeah, because you have the lighter beers, which I suppose are predominantly... you would call them a lager or a pilsner of some kind. And then you get the amber beers, don't you? Like you're saying, the redder beers... and then going on to the nice dark beer. As you can tell, I do prefer the dark beers.
Yes, it's because a beer is called a lager or called an ale, it doesn't mean to say that it is better. The problem that we have in this country is that many of the lagers that are sold are actually very poor quality beers. You have lagers abroad, and people say, they taste much better when we go to the continent. And of course, there's a reason for that, and that usually comes down to the process, as I was explaining before. The process is often just too big. If you imagine yourself as a little yeast cell, and for thousands of years you've been growing in a depth of beer about 6 or 8 feet deep, if you're suddenly shoved into a vessel and it's 200 or 300 feet deep, you're going to be squeezed by the pressure of that vessel. Also, in vessels that size, you can't control the temperature so easily. And even in our vessels, we see different temperatures within a matter of 2 or 3 feet. Well, if you've got vessels that are 40 feet wide, you're going to get inconsistencies with the product. You're going to have strange things going on. Which is why...
You're working with live products, aren't
absolutely.
You?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, you can nip in, and every day we come in, I can tell exactly what's going on with the fermentation just by smelling it. I don't even have to go into the brew house, because I can smell it from the hallway when you walk in. I can tell at what point the fermentation is, how it's going, if it's getting a little bit warm, possibly. It's 30 years of looking at fermentations and scratching my head.
Yes, well, like you say, it comes down to experience and knowledge and passion as well. And wanting to, I think that does help with any product, is if you love what you do, it actually comes through your product.
Yes, and I think it's a determination to do things well, get things right. And that is born into people rather than being trained into people. If you train people into these things, yes, they can do it, but there's never the innate need to improve something, to push on and make it better and investigate the materials that are available. We have a range of beers, for instance, through the year, which are what we call our experimental beers. And although they're under the same name, same four names through the years, they're part of the Alia range, which are pagan festivals, Roman festivals. So we produce a beer to suit each of these festivals, but we will change the materials each year. If something new comes in, we'll try that, because of course variety is the spice of life.
Got no gloves and I don't wear a hat in these. Streets are cold and I forgot the reasons I came. Walk a mile and I cross the bridge to where heat of inner stream meets cold river air. And I wonder if I will survive the wave that'll drown this place. Clockwork planet, and I've broken every key, trying to keep the time from twisting out of reach. And it's one Mississippi, it is two, time's grip is slipping. It is three Mississippi, time stands still. Got no home and I made no plans in this. City holds me in the palm of its hand and it seems this is where you catch your breath. Well, I'm thinking of you and I can hear your words when you said flying away is for the birds. And by the way, genius, you ain't walking south. Planet, and I've broken every key, trying to keep the time from twisting out of reach. It's one Mississippi, it is two, time's grip is slipping. It is three Mississippi, time stands still. Mississippi, can we stop the clocks from ticking? It is five Mississippi, time stands still.
Mississippi, time stand still.
The station for the expat community in Belgrade. This is Belgrade Life.
In this one, you have the liquor in this one.
That's the vessel on the left is where we heat the hot liquor overnight. And we call it liquor rather than water because it's a solution of salts. And if we add chemicals anywhere, that is where we might add some chemicals. But they're perfectly natural chemicals. They're sulfates, they're chlorides. They're things that alter the water slightly, which will alter the end beer. So you may wish to produce a beer that is more bitter so you can increase the number, the sulfate content, or a rounder beer you'll get from using chlorides. All things that will be naturally occurring in water, possibly somewhere else in the country. We're very fortunate we get water from East Surrey Water, excellent water, very, very easy to manipulate, very clean, very very good water to start off brewing with. And from that vessel where the grains are mixed with hot water, that will sit for an hour, and that's where the sugars are created. They are then pumped up into the vessel you see slightly higher up, which is called the copper. It's all the vessels are surrounded by pine cladding, as you can see, which retains the heat. And the top vessel there, where it's pumped up, is called the copper. Originally, of course, it was made of copper, which is why it's called a copper, but still now stainless steel, pine clad to keep the heat in, and that's where we add the hops. And you can add hops for bitterness, you can add them for flavour, you can add them for aroma, all at different times and a different mix, depending on what you're trying to achieve.
And that looks like rather a large tin bath.
Well, the large tin bath is what we call the hop back. And brewing vessels are known as backs. And this is where it's effectively, as you can see, that plate there with the little holes in lays on the bottom of the vessel. So when the wort from the copper above drops into it, that the hops conveniently settle down and act as a filter bed. It's a small system, it's a simple system, but the simplicity is the great beauty of it because it makes it hugely flexible.
So what sort of volumes do you do in a week? Is that seasonally dependent on how much you're producing?
Well, we're growing very gently and very steadily, and we've increased our fermenting capacity next door, but we expand sideways. I won't produce two bigger vessels because, of course, that leads me then to the mistake that other breweries make, which is having vessels that are too great, that their yeast gets upset, the quality of their product goes down. Everything for me is ensuring the quality remains, no matter how much we produce. But we produce in batches, so each individual batch of beer is 360 gallons, which is quite a lot of pints. and that goes through, that takes 6 days to produce. The raw wort, which ferments, is made on one single day, and then 3 days fermenting, and then 2 days cooling down.
So the whole length of the process would be
6 days.
6 days.
Very. Then you have raw beer, what's known as green beer, and of course, then depending on the type of beer, it will take anything between 10 days to 3 weeks, 4 weeks to mature.
Okay, so it's not a huge turnaround, is it, to wait for the end result?
No. Certainly, top beers like this, which are English-style top fermenting beers, which are warm fermenting beers, are produced fairly quickly. Lagers, for instance, take a lot longer if they're made correctly, because the word lager means storage, and they might take the same period of time to make the raw beer as we do here, but then it's introduced into cold tanks and stored for 6 to 8 weeks. So it is a much longer process. And for me, distinctly worrying, as I couldn't see that far ahead. I could manage to see a week ahead in the brewing process, but 2 months would be a bit tricky.
Before you accuse me, take a look at yourself. Sam Sego. I called your mama about 3 or 4 nights ago. Well, your mama said, son, don't call my daughter no more. Before you accuse me, take a look at yourself. Before you accuse me, take a look at yourself. You say I'm spending my money on other women. You taking money from someone else.
In here.
If you're lucky, I'll let you sniff my fermentation.
Oh, will you? Can I?
Let's stumble through here and see what's going on. This is a magic little thing. Do watch your head come through. If you carefully nip up there.
Okay. I'm not a lover of ladders, I have to say. But if I've been offered to sniff someone's fermentation, then you've got to do it, haven't you, really?
What's going on?
Wow, that smells fantastic. It's really, because it's just very, you can just see some air coming through. It's just very slightly bubbling.
Mm.
But I wouldn't even call it bubbling. If I were cooking, I would say this is on the lowest simmer you could possibly have.
Yeah. One of the things I do in the brewery is I ferment at low temperatures, lower than would be normal in brewing, because you get more of those strange chemicals I mentioned earlier, the higher temperatures you ferment at.
Oh, I'm back down safe now. But that smells fantastic, because I think sometimes people it's going to smell very bitter and bittery.
It's quite aromatic, isn't it?
It really is. Mm. It smells quite sweet, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Quite sweet.
Well, this is on the third day of fermentation, so it's beginning to come to the end of its fermentation, and then we'll be chilling it down, and that'll take the yeast, because the Greek yeast grows a lot within the fermentation. And, of course, one of the skills in brewing is to balance the amount your yeast is growing. The more you grow, the more likely you are to get these nasty bitterness flavours in the back of your palate. I prefer fairly untraditional low temperatures, so it gives a cleaner flavour. That's my opinion. There are many, many ways to brew beer. Over 30 years, I've developed my personal...
Well, you're obviously doing something right.
Yes, not a lot.
Well, we won't go there. That's a whole different conversation.
Exactly. But the beer seems to be enjoyed by people, which is the most important thing.
Because you've got four of these in here.
Yes.
So they're all at different stages.
This week I've only used this one, the once, because for various reasons, mainly because we've got an awful lot of beer in the brewery. I'm just brewing the once this week, and then we're back into a normal cycle next week. It's a fairly unusual week. Normally we'd have probably three of these full, all at different stages. And then that's quite interesting, watching the different stages.
Yeah.
I know that James, who joined us about a year ago, is absolutely fascinated, because one of the great things about this brewery is that the vessels are open. A lot of small breweries have completely closed vessels. It's a modern way of doing it. But you don't see what's happening with your fermentation. You don't smell it.
Mm.
You can't see what's going. You can't see the low foam, the high foam, the rocky heads.
Well, it's interesting in there because you've got that's on one side of it. Because I mean, I don't know whether that's where it's the heat that it's generating itself, so it changes that, you know, the foam that you've got on the top. But the majority of it there, it's really pale. It's almost what you would see on a beer, on a head of beer.
Mm. Well, it is pale. Well, the way you're seeing the brown stuff is where the fermentation is cleaning itself, and that's natural proteins that have come out, and they'll be deposited on the side of the vessel. And, of course, having a small vessel, those proteins do get deposited on the side. If you've got a huge vessel, they don't. They can be anywhere in the beer, and then they have to be taken out somehow else. So this is a very, very natural, simple, but natural process. And we can watch every single day what's going on.
Yeah, you've got your eye on the beer.
Yes, very much so.
Well, I think probably the last thing we need to do is taste some.
I walked into a beer tavern to give a girl a nice time. I had $45 when I entered. When I left, I had one dime. Wasn't that a beer-drinking woman? Don't you know, man, don't you know? She was a beer-drinking woman. I don't wanna see her no more. I spent down to my last dime. She says, darling, I know you're not through. I told her, yes, baby doll, and the diploma belongs to you. Wasn't that a beer-drinking woman? Don't you know, man, don't you know? Lord, that was a beer-drinking woman. I don't want to see her no more. She'd often say, excuse me a minute, I've got to step around here. And every time she'd come back, she'd say, daddy, buy me another quart of beer. Wasn't that a beer-drinking woman? Don't you know, man, don't you know? A beer drinking woman, I don't want to see her no more. I said, I've got to step off, baby. Are there anything else you like? She says, daddy, I'll keep this table if you'll promise me you'll be back. Wasn't that a beer drinking woman? Don't you know, man? Don't you know? A beer drinking woman, I don't want to see her no more. I say, I'm sorry, baby, but I only have one more dime. She said, Daddy, buy me a small bottle of beer so I can concentrate my mind. Wasn't that a beer-drinking woman? Don't you know, man, don't you know? What kind of woman was that? Well, she was a beer-drinking woman. I don't want to see her no more.
What you will see from our beer is a lot more fizz, what I call fizz. Aficionados will call it cask conditioning. But as you can see, there's a lot more
it's
gas.
It's amazing just watching it, though, as it clears, as it...
That's right, as it rises up. That's what beer should be like. People have forgotten that beer should have this conditioning. They think of it as being a flat product. It's not flat. Many beers are flat, but they shouldn't be. If you read about beer in the 1930s, when they talked about sparkling ale, it wasn't just about bottled beers, but it was actually about cask beers as well.
But you get that, you know, it's a natural thing with the yeast and everything. It's a part of the fermentation.
It is. It's the secondary fermentation. But, of course, with modern yeasts, we were fortunate in growing up in the old-fashioned way and learnt about multiple yeast strains. And what different yeasts do, rather like the hops, they do different things, and you have to choose what to do. Now, majority of brewers will just use a single strain yeast, and it works perfectly well. Using multiple strains is much more complex, and if you just choose two, it doesn't necessarily mean to say that it works. I'm fortunate in that I understand it, and therefore I've got one that does one thing and another that does something else. But it pays to wait a little bit to have a lovely clear beer.
That's beautiful.
And we'll have a slurp.
Winter sun through the beer. It's rather nice, isn't it?
With the name Pilgrim there
yes.
as well.
Okay.
Let's have a slurp.
I might get a bit of a froth moustache here. That's delicious.
Thank you.
It is... Like you say, we're outside, so it's a little colder than the.
We're in the beer garden, but we shouldn't be in winter.
Yes, but that's really delicious, and it is a beautiful colour.
Hmm.
Absolutely beautiful colour, and very very clear.
Well, we specific colour. For me, beer is about everything. It's as a German brewing friend of mine would say. David, it's the totality, and that's right, it's everything. It's the fact that you've got that beautiful foam head that stays there. That's not a chemical head. That's not added. It's brewed into it. And the clarity of the beer, I was telling you about the proteins and ensuring that you get the correct proteins out of the beer. It'll stay foamy like that forever.
Well, and it's actually that foam on the top is really quite creamy. It doesn't just dissipate. It doesn't just disappear as soon as you start drinking it.
That's right.
You could almost... I'm looking at it.
You could almost fall in love with this, couldn't you?
I could fall in love with it. And I was going to say, you could almost sort of scoop that off with a spoon. It's a grown-up cappuccino.
It's lovely beer. And this is one of the things to look for when you're in a pub. Is the presentation good? Does the beer, does the foam say, does it what we call lace down the glass? So that every time if you're literally gulping the beer, you'll have one line of foam after the other, but it should stay all the way down. And it should also give you a little sparkle on the tongue as well because of the carbon dioxide in the beer. And that helps clear your palate, because of course, if you put too many hops in a beer, as many young brewers do, in my opinion, then the palate gets clogged up. And then the beauty of having the carbon dioxide, it helps clean the palate, rather like champagne. Mm. You should have a good level of fizz in champagne, because that's what makes it enticing. It's the same for ale as well. If it's flat, then it's not a pleasant drink. But unfortunately, there's an awful lot of quite flat beer around there. We try to do the opposite, and people think we're weird, but we're the ones who are right, and everybody else is wrong.
Well, thank you very much for your time here. It's been incredibly interesting. And, of course, this very last bit has been incredibly enjoyable. And I look forward to drinking more of your beer.
Well, thank you very much for visiting Pilgrim of Reigate.
don't be wrong. My mistakes won't make me strong. I'm stepping out into the great unknown. I'm feeling wings, though I've never flown. Got a mind on my own. I'm flesh and blood to the bone. Got a right to be wrong, so just leave me alone.
Belgrade Life.
feet, shake your hands, make God laugh, tell him all your plans, 'cause we look fine.